Hey everybody, it is Wednesday, March 27th, and this is Sunday Golds, a Florida State baseball podcast. Aria Masudi and Brett Nevitt, and what a difference a couple of days can make for a baseball team as the Noles pound Florida 14-3, run-ruled the Gators in Jacksonville. It had been a while since the Noles won the series against the Florida Gators. I say it's a series, it's kind of a series. You play three times, they're all midweek, spaced out 2 weeks apart, and sometimes longer, depending on the year. And so I don't know that I put a lot of stock into who's better than who because of that. You don't get to see each other's weekend arms. I didn't when Florida was winning all of them, and I don't now. However, here's what I do like. Beating the Gators, it's fun. It feels good. It is fun for social media, and it's good for morale. And the Noles did it, and I think that they really released a lot of frustration for 10 years on the Gators into this year and the way that they played them, and a lot of frustration, Brett, from the weekend in Clemson. That was a lot of fun. That was a great time, and the Seminole bats were incredible, as they have been all year long.
Yeah, I think it had a lot to do with the frustration from the weekend, and I was just really, really impressed and pleased with the response of the team after the weekend that they had, and especially the response of the pitchers, and especially on a full bullpen day. You knew going into that you were going to have to rely on your bullpen on the midweek game to get through it, and you weren't really going to extend anybody out too much with the Thursday to Saturday series coming up. So I think, you know, even after the game, Link said, like, it wasn't a great feeling getting back on the bus to go over to Jacksonville, but, you know, once they got there, they took care of business, and they responded like they've responded a lot this year. I mean, even at Clemson, they had responded, and they just didn't get the job done, but they kept responding to get themselves in leads that, you know, they obviously ended up blowing. But this team, I think at this point we can see that there is some mental strength to this team, and they're able to respond to things. I don't really know if I that's probably the most impressed I've been with this program, just with the ability to bounce back the way they did. I mean, they've been on the bus probably more than they had been home between the end of the Sunday game and the beginning of that Florida game. So, I'm just really, really impressed with the way they were able to bounce back and kind of exercise the demons of the weekend and get it over with, and then run rule Florida in just a really dominant way to win the season series.
Baseball is wild, isn't it? You can get run rule just a couple of games before and then run rule somebody else. And it's just the way it goes sometimes. And that's why I think you and I have been patient and try and be measured, so to speak, with the way we evaluate this team. When they were 19-0 and when they lost three games, it is a marathon of a season. And you and I, again, we've been very consistent in that approach in terms of, yes, you can raise concerns, but I do think you need a sample size of 60 games, which is why you play the season and why they have peaks and they have valleys and they have arcs. And they really are like movies, right? Like, everything has a peak. The climax, so to speak, of a movie, and then you try and figure out the rest of it. And some of the best movies start really sad and they end really well, and some of the best movies start really well and they end really sad, and they all have impacts on you. And I just think this 2024 edition of the Noles, they're going to have some dips, they're going to have some peaks, and at the end of the day, Brett, you just hope that all their experiences throughout the seasons, every series that they play, will have them prepared for when it counts come the end of May and end in June.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, we know this is a good baseball team. I mean, no matter what happened at Clemson, like, to win 19 games in a row, you have to be a good baseball team to do it. I think this past weekend they had an opportunity to show people that they have the potential to be a great team, and they just kind of let that slip away from them. And but you bounce right back, and, you know, you got to be able to do things like this to be a successful baseball team. And it was something that they couldn't do last year, and why, you know, the losing streaks that they had extended out so long. They just couldn't get out of the rut they were in. And, you know, a lot of that had to do with depth and stuff. But when you have a relentless offense like this team does, like, you're going to keep coming to the park every day with confidence that you can win and beat anybody, because you're going to just keep hitting, and you're going to hit home runs. You're going to be able to do other things offensively. And once you get to the weekend, I think you have confidence in your starters. And, like, we saw from the bullpen mostly what they had done before the weekend at Clemson. So it was just really good to see those guys get back out there and start to regain some confidence, and especially John Abraham and the way that he pitched.
we talk about projecting, right, towards the end of the season and how all of our analysis is kind of pushing towards what it will look like in the end. Why will it matter in the end? Well, John Abraham, like you said, didn't pitch well against Clemson, right? He looked overwhelmed by the moment, and it showed. And we talked about how he needs to get the ball back. And we talked in the last episode about the ball has to be put back into his hands, and he needs to be put in a similar situation to be able to get the job done. And he responded. 3 1/3 innings, shutout baseball. He didn't give up a hit. 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. He got some Ks, and he punched out some really good hitters, right? I mean, Ty Evans is no joke. Jack Caglione might go first overall in the draft. What did you see from Abraham, and what improved from his last outing in Clemson?
Yeah, I thought the confidence was just back. He just threw with way more conviction than he did at Clemson. Like, his velocity was way down at Clemson, and I think it was a little bit of trying to guide the ball into the zone. And I think his velo was down on the fastball all the way to 86 at one point, but against Florida, I was told he was 92, 94, and he was banging the knuckle curve like he usually does when he's successful, and when he's dropping in the knuckle curve for strikes and getting it over early in counts, and he's getting leverage, and he can really go attack hitters with the spin that he has. So, I think everybody in that dugout knew what that moment meant when he came off the field in the seventh. A lot of hugs, a lot of love from the dugout. I think everybody there knew they needed that from someone, and to get it from a freshman was pretty special, and especially for him to bounce back from Saturday that quickly. And like we've talked about, you need some freshmen to step up with guys that you've lost from this pitching staff due to injuries. So getting John back out there and seeing more of what you had seen from him in the past 7-8 weeks of positive trends he had made with the changeup in play a bit more, with the knuckle curve being what it is, adding a slider, and also getting more consistent with the fastball. So we saw all that stuff come back together on Tuesday against Florida, and he made a couple of their hitters look pretty silly at times. So that was just really, really good to see. And up and down the staff, I mean, 13 Ks to 3 walks, that's what you want.
Changeup was really good from Abraham, and I think that staff at times going into Tuesday was just trying to figure out how to piece the day together, right? I mean, you had just fought a pretty heartbreaking series at Clemson, and you'd used everybody pretty much there. Like you just said, Brett, you needed somebody to kind of take the bull by the horns and give you some extension, right? Armstrong, you know, comes out, and I think they might have wanted 2 innings out of Armstrong if they could have got it. He was only able to give you one. And then they needed to piece it together. So Abraham gets the hat tip for being able to step up. But I also thought Joe Charles threw well. And I thought Brennan Oxford fits the mold of another kid who got another shot. And this time, he really stepped up to the plate and then stepped up to the challenge.
Yeah, Joe got his first career win. Really, really cool to see for him. Just someone that's really struggled to get on the mound and stay on the mound in his college career. I think 2 years at North Carolina, really never really pitched because of a lower body injury. And then when he got to Florida State, had Tommy John his first year here and wasn't really able to get back much at all in last year as well. And this is his first year of true health. And, you know, he's been good so far. And 2 innings, 3 strikeouts, only allowed one hit, didn't walk anybody, which was big for him. Yeah, it's just really good to see Joe out there. And he's ripping off the breaking balls. That's his strength. Going to the slider especially pretty often, but he's also going to drop in the curveball as well for strikes, and he's going to run the fastball up to 94, 95. So just as long as Joe's out there and toeing the rubber, that's encouraging. But when he's giving you strikes and throwing the slider the way he has so far, that's going to go a long way for you. Yeah, Oxford obviously there in the seventh inning after the first two, you know, they put 2 runners on board with 1 out. On free passes, but Ox came in and struck out 2 straight batters to put that to bed. And then I think Florida went to all pinch hitters in the 8th inning. I think they just wanted to get out of there and just end it in the run rule. But really good to see Ox get back out there. I think he faced 5 batters, retired all of them. So a perfect outing from him out of the bullpen.
Would you agree with me that these 3, Charles, Abraham, Oxford, are going to have to factor in heavily to the plans of what Florida State wants to do and has to do if they're going to reach their goals at the end of the year?
Yeah, I think at this point, basically everybody needs to factor in it in some way that they have, everybody they've been using so far. Like, they, to be able to fill the roles and fit in as you need to, like especially when Ben comes back, you're still going to need everybody to fill a role once you lose guys like Gavin Adams and Jacob Marlowe, who you don't expect to see for the year. So, yeah, I think everybody's going to factor in. I think the freshmen are going to factor in. The older guys are going to factor in. It's going to be a full group effort for that bullpen to get through this year and try to throw as many strikes as they can and get as many outs as they can. But the more outs you can get from your starters on the weekend, then that limits all the work you have to do out of the pen. So, yeah, but I do think that just everybody's going to need to be involved for this to be successful in the long term.
Without a doubt. I'm looking forward to the weekend, and we'll preview Louisville here in a second. It's going to be a shorter week, right, with Thursday, Friday, Saturday, with Easter Sunday, and the ACC now mandating to get the series is done by Saturday. So that moves everybody's schedule up a day. And some people it's 2 days, because if you think about it, Florida State didn't play on Friday of last week due to the rain and played that doubleheader. So this is going to be a challenging week for FSU against a good Louisville team. But we'll get to the Cardinals here in a second, Brett. I just want to wrap up on Florida State. The lineup, man. Mm-hmm. It's as fun a lineup as you've been able to cover in your time in Tallahassee, you know, with Florida State baseball and getting to cover them and the relentlessness of this order, 1 through 9. They're hoping to have Diamez Ross back potentially this weekend, but if not, very, very soon. They're doing it without him. But what I'm telling you, man, like, your bottom of your order leaves the park. Like, the middle of your order leaves the park. The top of your order leaves the park. They can do it on first pitch. They can do it down 0-2 in the count. They can do it in hitters' counts. They can do it on heaters. They can do it on off-speed. It's really fun to watch, man. Like, I am genuinely enjoying watching this offense mash.
Yeah, I think, you know, 7 out of 9 hitters in your lineup had a hit last night. You had 3 hits from Tibbs, 3 hits from Cantu, and 3 hits from West. West was on base in 4 of 5 plate appearances. I think his OBP is up to 500 now with 10 walks to 4 strikeouts. Obviously, you get the 2 home runs from Faroe. Him and Cantu both drive in 5 runs. And, you know, if you start to get more power out of Faroe and Cantu as well, which, you know, it's in there. You saw it last year. I think, you know, Faroe hit 15 last year. Cantu hit 11. So, you know, that's in there. But, you know, Cantu had his first home run this past weekend, and that was a no-doubter. And then another no-doubter last night. Didn't have the TrackMan numbers for last night, but I would think that ball is probably over 400 feet too. And with Faroe, he drove first home run to opposite field that might have been a little wind aided to creep over the wall, but that's a good swing on a ball to drive it that way. And then you know, he puts the cherry on top of that game and in the 8th inning with the grand slam after Marco drew a bases loaded walk. So you know, if you start to get more power out of those guys that's in there, this lineup just gets deeper and deeper with the physical impact. But those guys have given you good at-bats all year so far, but you know that there's a little bit more power in there as well, and that's going to go a long way.
Yeah, that second home run, the grand slam that Faroe hit, Brett, that needed no wind. It needed no help. It actually reminded me of the home run he hit at Hauser, right, the one that went over the screen and right. Just a bit of a different backdrop, but that ball was, it was cooked.
Yeah.
And I was, at that point in the ball game, I had made my way down to the first baseline to see a couple of buddies, and we're all sitting down there, and this is the beautiful part about the game in Jacksonville. Because it's got both fan bases, this year the Florida fans were positioned on that first base side, and they had started clearing out, because they could tell it wasn't their night. And so the home run, the grand slam, was just a perfect angle, and the Seminole fans erupted. I mean, it was like hearing that place go into the war chant, and you see just Garnett left, because it was pretty late in the game, right? Was that the 7th inning?
The 8th inning.
8th inning. Yeah. It was the bottom of the 8th?
Top
of the, we were the away team. Top of the 8th. So basically at the end, so Florida fans, yeah, had completely trickled out. It was a takeover of Knoll Nation, and it was cool. And it's been a while since that park has ended and the majority of fans left in the stadium to cheer for the final few outs are Seminole fans. So that moment was really cool. And if Faroe does that, like you said, I mean, it just changes the complexion of the bottom of your order, because him and Lodis can both leave the park. I actually thought Jackson West just missed a home run. At Hauser, the ball that he hit to the warning track's probably gone.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a 7, 8, 9 that right there, I mean, that's as good as you're going to find in college baseball, the bottom of the order.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just what we've talked about for so long, the 1 through 9, the depth of it. I mean, you look at Florida's lineup, for example, and you know what they have at the top of their lineup, but 7, 8, 9, I mean, Thomas, the third baseman's hitting below 200. Garrison, the catcher's hitting below 200. And kind of a revolving door of center fielders there for them that haven't really found it yet. So, I mean, that's the number 6 team in the country. And you have to feel like at the bottom of your order, you just feel like you have a lot more depth there and impact. So, yeah, I mean, we've talked about this for so long, and it just keeps showing itself. The more and more games they play, this offense continues to hit. They hit all weekend at Clemson, even though you didn't win a game, but they showed what they were capable of there, and this lineup's capable of keeping you in games with anybody in the country, basically.
What impresses you most about this offense?
It's just the depth and the versatility of guys and being able to have power impact anywhere and being able to change the game with one swing. You know, this lineup is pretty aggressive, but I think that's part of not wanting to strike out much. I think, you know, when you're swinging early in counts, it limits the chances of striking out when you're putting the ball in play. And, you know, it's a give and take when you're not walking as much. And on days that the balls go right at people, you're going to maybe not make the starter throw many pitches. But at the same time, you force the defense to play defense. And, you know, that's part of why the opponents Florida State has played this year has made so many errors. I mean, you've 40 errors against you so far this year, 951 fielding percentage. And that's what happens when you put the ball in play and put the pressure on teams. So they've done a good job of putting the ball in play. And when they put it in play, there's a lot of times that it's going to go for extra bases. So, yeah, it's just been an impressive start to the year for the lineup.
Yeah, and they do it fast. You've noticed that, and you've commented on it. But the ability to come out of the gate in the first couple of innings and really make the opponent feel you, impressive. And they did it again against Florida. Cantu, the double, I remember down the right field line, just roped it into the corner and 3 runs score. And I think it just kind of
came after 3 trash hits.
Yeah, I heard that was rough.
Hey, I didn't listen to it live.
I didn't either. We were at the game.
Started getting so many tweets about it.
I saw social media. Everybody was crazy.
Gosh.
Yeah, I mean, it was the Florida radio broadcasters. I know there's a lot of people who thought it was ESPN, and I know I feel like I have to defend ESPN.
But here's my thing. Does Lulu ever talk
about... Yeah, Lulu about... would never. Not like that.
No.
And one of the guys, I believe, is it Sean Kelly, maybe? He's the voice. So he's the Jeff Colhane of Florida, the Gators. He works for ESPN, like, as a radio guy. Like, he's been professional. And so it's just weird. I just thought it was strange. I don't think they realized... Maybe when they came in, they're so used to being Florida fans only listening to the radio that when it was simulcast. So the way it worked this year, I'm just going to very quickly, the cliff notes. This year, Florida was the home team. And so naturally, they get the choice of broadcasting the game or not. ESPN did not pick up the game. They decided that from a national perspective, they weren't going to spend the money to be able to put that on what they call linear, which is your cable broadcast, your cable box. So Florida got the chance to do what they wanted to do at their home games when it's not on national TV, and that's SEC Network Plus. It's a third party. The school produces it, sends it down to the ESPN3 line on the app, and then it comes out over the air. So the Gators didn't want to pay for announcers to come and do that. So what they did was the radio team goes to every game anyway. We're just going to patch in the audio. I don't think the two announcers realized how many people were watching the game.
Mm.
And I don't know why you would comment the way that you did. And again, I don't want to spend too much time on this because who cares? I mean, it's two schmucks talking on the radio to a fan base of schmucks. So like, not really worried about it, but it is annoying. And I know Florida State fans didn't like it. So I think you're glad Florida State pounded them 14-3 in a run rule. And those two had to commentate the entire game if you didn't turn it off. And what I would recommend you do is literally, unless it's me calling the game, which I will be this weekend. For those of you wondering, I got some emails recently that asked if I was done calling games. No, I'm actually back this weekend against Louisville. So 3 games on ACC Network Extra. And Florida State does a far better job than the University of Florida at producing these games. And it's not really debatable or close. However, I digress. You should put Lulu's voice on. You should turn the volume off, and you should pop Lulu's voice on, because Eric Llewellyn calls a phenomenal baseball game. And good dude, great Noel. That's the way I would do it. And I have done it. Turn off the ESPN3 announcers and pop them on. Again, unless it's me, then keep it on. Anyhow. So, any final thoughts on this Gator game? I know it'd been almost a decade since they'd won the series. It feels good. It's big for recruiting. It's kind of nice to stop the bleeding, to do it twice like this, kind of in dominant fashion, so to speak. I think says a lot about what Link's trying to build in this state and the staying power of Florida State baseball in the state of Florida. But that was an overall really fun night, and it made the drive back to Tallahassee far more enjoyable than some of those trips back from Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, I think just it's all about the response from the team. That's my biggest takeaway from the game, and makes me feel good about how they're going to respond to potential more dips in the season. I mean, Link said it is the best response he's ever seen from any team he's coached, and that includes a Notre Dame team that lost game two to Tennessee in blowout fashion in a super regional and came back and won the next day and went to Omaha. So, you know, Link just he struggled to even describe the feeling that he felt standing in the dugout. But I just, yeah, it's just such a brutal weekend, and to be able to come back and such short rest and a short turnaround to jump back on the bus and try to go at it again with the top 10 team in the country, it's just really, really impressive. And yeah, I just can't do. He's a Jacksonville native, probably really cool for him to do it there. He said he probably had 50 people there, family and friends. So, yeah, I mean, he's just been so good for this team so far this year, and to see the power start to come out has been a really encouraging sign. But 3-for-4 last night, 2 runs, 5 ribbies, also had a walk. He's hitting .388 so far this year with .563 slug and a .485 OBP. As many walks as strikeouts. So you just have to be really pleased with what he's given you so far offensively. And having him, you know, in that 5 spot now, it should be someone that, you know, you can rely on behind that kind of core of your lineup with Smith, Tibbs, and Ferrer.
Link was commenting, Brett, on just he was impressed with Florida State's ability to lock in pitch by pitch and to really tune out everything else. Not just on the mound, but at the plate, being able to flush everything that's happened to come in and focus on the very next pitch. And I think that's going to benefit them no matter who's throwing for that offense. It could be Florida's bullpen arms, right? It could be Philpott, Slater, Purnell, and the rest of them. Or it could be a Chase Burns at Wake Forest. It could be another team's ace. If you focus on the pitch to pitch, getting into leverage counts, you show a mental fortitude that I think is going to be able to catapult this team very deep into the postseason. Like this team, if they can do that every game, they've got a shot to win a lot of baseball games and to really position themselves well.
Yeah. I mean, how many times have we heard Norvell say respond, stuff like that? And it's kind of become the identity of that program. And obviously that program has had a lot of success recently. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's something that we've talked about coming into the season. We've talked about coming out of last weekend and how you respond to that is going to say a lot of about you. And I think they put that on display last night, and they just let the play on the field do the talking for them.
Fun night. I hope all you Noles who made the trip enjoyed it. And for the Jacksonville area Noles that have gone to a lot of games now there where it has not ended in favorable scoreline, you got what you wanted. It was loud, near 8,000 people there. That was as many Noles as I've seen in that park in quite some time. It was a good time for everybody. I saw boosters around, tailgates were going. Maybe it was, what was the bar across the street from the baseball grounds? Intuition, maybe? It's either Intuition or Infusion. I think it's Intuition. I went there, had a beer. It was a good time. It was a brewery that was really good. So all around, really good day in Duval County. So big win. You move to 20-3 on the year, but series are more important than midweeks. And the Seminoles need to respond to stay on this theme against a Louisville team as we make this transition that I think is capable of being a tough out this weekend. They're 16-9 on the year. Dan McDonald's one of the best coaches in college baseball. For the longest time, Louisville was the cream of the crop in the ACC. Like, that was the most consistent program for the better part of a decade, right? From the 2010s to the 2020s. The last couple of years, they've missed the tournament twice. And now they sandwiched a super regional berth in between that. It's a group that's usually going to run well, right? Like, they're athletic. That's something that he loves, is kids who can play multiple positions, that they fit the athleticism bill. They're not always power-oriented. Now, this team has a couple of guys that can leave the yard, and there's some balance there. But they are speed-oriented. They can play small ball. They can slap doubles, and they will steal bases. They will swipe bags, and they will put pressure on you on the base paths, maybe more than any other ACC team that you'll find in the conference. So, unique challenge, maybe a bunch of lefties that you're going to see throw to for Dan McDonald's group. But, Brett, I'm pretty excited about this weekend for Florida State. I'm looking forward to seeing how the Noles respond.
Yeah, I think, like you said, Louisville always presents a unique challenge with the way that they approach the offensive game and the pressure that they try to put on you and some of the small ball that they play. And they kind of recruit to play this way all the time. And they've already got 55 stolen bases this year, which leads the ACC. And, you know, I think most times in recent years they have led the ACC in stolen bases. Lucas Moore has 14 stolen bases. JT Benson also has 15 stolen bases. And Louisville's another team that puts the ball in play at a pretty high rate. Outside of Ryan McCoy, who has 30 strikeouts, they just don't strike out much. And they try to put the ball in play and put pressure on you and make things happen on the bases at all times. But, yeah, they do have a little bit more balance this year. They have 59 doubles and 39 home runs. A good bit of guys that have, like, three or more home runs. Luke Napleton, who hasn't played every single game for them, actually leads them with seven home runs. But, yeah, I think you'll see some capable arms on the mound, too, at least starting-wise for them. I think the question with Louisville, like a lot of teams, is the bullpen. There's a lot of guys here with pretty high inflated ERAs that have pitched a good amount of innings out of their bullpen. So, I think once again it comes down to who can execute better at late in games and who can throw more strikes out of the bullpen, because I think these are two pretty capable offenses. And this will be a good test for Florida State's defense and how they can handle that, and a good test for the catchers and pitchers of how they can control the run game. But like Link said today, the best way to control the run game is just to keep runners off base. So you got to get, like, first down. You can't let leadoff runners on base, and every out is going to be really precious against a team that can run the bases like this.
Yeah, I've been doing some game prep, just trying to get ready for this series and the broadcast side of things and the Napleton kid. I want to say he's a Division II transfer, and he hit like 50-something home runs in his career in D2. And I think last year he almost hit 30 home runs. So he's a pretty big power bat. They didn't know how it would translate to this level, but 397 with seven bombs in 58 at-bats, I would say he's slugging 879, Brett. Like, it's translating right now for him. So they've got some really good transfer pieces. Eddie King Jr. has made a jump. He had a really good summer in the Cape. And then, you know, they've got guys that have been there, you know, the JT Bensons, the Logan Beards of the world that have been there a couple of years. And that's something that McDonald does well. He keeps kids in his program and keeps them for a while, right? Like, it's pretty routine for them to make it to their junior and senior years and develop into guys that can be draftable. That's kind of something they've always prided themselves on, is the player development aspect. And I think I said JT Benson already, but that's another good player. Isaac Humphrey's been there for a couple of years now. And so, it's a group that's veteran. They've got some veteran pieces. They're going to run. They're going to compete pitch by pitch in the box and really fight for everything they have. They've lost both series in the ACC that they've played this year. I think that's something we should note. Virginia Tech beat them 2 out of 3 in Louisville, and Wake Forest beat them 2 out of 3 in Winston-Salem. So no sweeps on the year. I don't know that I'm expecting a sweep this weekend for Florida State. I think that would be best case scenario, obviously. But I would expect a series win. At the very minimum, I think Florida State should protect its home park, right? Get the job done, 2 out of 3. If you can get 3, I think you've kind of not necessarily erased the weekend at Clemson, but I think you've kind of put yourself back on track to where you were going before the weekend at Duck Kingsmore.
Yeah, you certainly want to get a series win this weekend after last weekend and dropping three in ACC play. You know, Louisville on the mound. I think we expect Sebastian Gongora to start on Thursday in game one, who's been their Friday starter so far this year. Gongora is a pretty big left-hander that transferred from Wright State, where he had success last year. 93.2 innings pitched last year and 89 strikeouts. I think he had like a 3.33 ERA and was the pitcher of the year in the conference. He's someone that will be like low 90s, I think, and run it up kind of to mid-90s with good spin on the fastball. And yeah, lefty with a big curveball. And I think he kind of throws like a cutterish slider as well and mixes in a changeup. So four pitch mix from him, and someone that's pretty experienced. So I don't think someone that will be scared at the moment. And obviously he started at Wake last week as well. So he's gotten into ACC play a good bit. 4.78 ERA so far this year, 39 strikeouts in 32 innings. 12 walks, so puts strike zone in play often, and 244 average against. The Saturday starter who's going to start on Friday, I think, is Evan Webster, also a left-hander. 29 innings, 26 strikeouts so far this year. Just puts the ball in the strike zone at a high rate, only 7 walks, giving up 27 hits, but limited damage so far with a 2.48 ERA. So face back-to-back left-handers to start the weekend, and I think that Louisville will probably go from there on Saturday and figure it out on Saturday. But you know, two pretty good starters that have had some success in the past and some success to begin this year.
Yeah, and they're both lefties, so I think that'll be unique, right, for Florida State. The righty bats are going to have to step up. I think Tibbs hits lefties fine. Cantu, I'm interested to see what that looks like. You flip Faroe from the left side, where I think he's a little bit better than the right side. Mm-hmm. He's going to have to bat righty. Trying to think of who else lefty-wise. If Diamez comes back, that could be interesting. Max Williams, interesting. Probably more of McGuire-Holbrook. Mm-hmm. It changes some things, right? Like, it does. It does make it a little bit more unique, and perhaps it evens some things out for Louisville with the matchup. I'm not sure. I don't know. The Noles haven't really had to face a weekend of lefties, so we'll see. They've got to be announced for game three. Riley Phillips has been a guy that they've used there in game threes before. Could it be a Carson Liggett? They've moved him to the pen after he struggled a little bit early on this year in the rotation. But he was really good for them last year. Liggett was one of their arms. He's one of their dudes last year. So I just don't think it's really clicked here in 24. And then the other guys that could potentially be an option, Patrick Forbes has been another one that they've used. I believe Forbes is actually a righty, older kid. But he's given up, I mean, batters are hitting 304 against him. So, like, he struggled to start the year, an ERA of 634. So we'll have to see. I'm intrigued by what they do. The offense for Florida State, though, back in its home park, should feel pretty good about what you can do there. And I hope that the Seminole faithful comes out and gives us another weekend of really big crowds. You guys have been phenomenal this year at Hauser. Like, they have been chill-inducing levels of environment and atmosphere. I hope Thursday doesn't scare you guys away, and Friday, Saturday. But you get Sunday off for Easter Sunday, and you get three games in Tallahassee. I've always kind of liked these Thursday starts for ACC conference play because it's just kind of a unique, cool change of pace, so to speak, right? Like, you're not really in the middle of the week, but you kind of are. And the SEC does it all the time with their Thursday through Saturdays for the SEC network, but unique for the ACC, Brett. Any other thoughts on Louisville?
Yeah, I think from the Florida State side of things, just looking for two things, probably just interested to see how they control the running game. You know, like we talked about, it's going to come into play against Louisville that they are going to try to run the bases on you any chance they get. So I'm intrigued to see how Florida State handles that. And then secondly, I want to see Leiter just be consistent and have, you know, two or three of his pitches going at a high rate and be able to land the curveball in the strike zone like he has in the past, but he didn't do much of on Saturday at Clemson. And then, you know, big thing with Leiter, I just want to see him get ahead in counts, because when he gets ahead in counts, batters are really going to struggle to have success against him. And the way he's able to keep guys off balance with the slider, curveball, and changeup, and then the fastball at the top of the zone. So Yeah, I just really want to see a good strong start from Leiter with all four pitches in play and at least two or three pitches consistently in the strike zone to get him ahead in counts early. So, yeah, I'm excited to see him get back out there and try to fix the mistakes from the Clemson game.
Is there any concern for you on just the shorter week? And it got sandwiched even more with, like we talked about, the Noles having to play two on Saturday. It moves everyone's timeline up a couple days.
Yeah, I think, you know, Leiter only threw, I think, 80 pitches last week, so not too concerned there. And at this point, you've done it a few times already this year, I think, with Jamie as well. You moved him up. I think there was one time that he got moved. Last week, I think, was Sunday and then to Saturday or something. There was one week where he moved from a Sunday to a Saturday. So these guys, with all the schedule changes that you've had so far, have kind of been bounced around here and there. So I think they're used to kind of having different type of schedules and different days of rest. So I'm not too concerned with that. I think they'll be all right. And I think you got through the Florida game well enough that you'll have most of your guys available for the start of the series and all your guys available by some point in the series.
And then if things go well, Sunday becomes kind of a blessing for you, you know?
Nice little off day.
Little off day. And then it kind of sets everyone's timeline back for the next week. So
happy Easter.
Happy Easter, no doubt. Anything else? Are we good here?
I'm good.
All right, man. Well, good stuff from you, as always. Nice tweet last night late with the salty Brett came out.
Hey, I'm just...
At a certain Florida beat writer. You're spitting facts.
It's
you're feeling yourself. You're allowed.
I just worry about your own team. Yeah. That's all I got to say.
I love it. That's my favorite version of you, by the way, is when salty Brett comes out. So, good stuff. I think we'll do a little bit of a mailbag next week at some point, maybe get an interview lined up.
Yeah.
Maybe a player or someone that's within the program or covers the program to hop on this pod and give us some variation. But I think we're just looking for 2 out of 3. Let's get it done. Let's win another ACC series and let's keep this train rolling. But appreciate you guys for listening. On Apple Pod, if you could give us 5 stars and leave us a comment down there, it really does make a difference. And like we've said before, it helps the algorithm so that more people can find us and it pops up in people's feeds and all that. So
this is the start of a new 100.
Yeah, we sped by last week and totally we didn't even realize there was 100. However, we've done more than 100 podcasts.
Because instant reactions are mixed in
and
there.
And some of your interviews that you've done haven't been total episodes. But it was our 100th time together, at least, on a full episode. Congrats, man. That's fun.
Congrats to you, too.
Thanks, man. It's been a lot of fun. Hopefully this season, after 100, kind of gives us some more to smile about. Because, you know, it's been tough for us the previous 9,900 episodes. So, all right, guys. Well, 6 o'clock Thursday, 6 Friday, 1 Saturday?
That's a great question.
I need to know.
I should have had that pulled up. I mean, you're the one broadcasting the games.
I should probably make sure.
I think you should know that.
Should I show up?
If Aria is late to a broadcast, we all know why. 6-6-2.
What did I say?
6-6-1, I think. You would have been there early for Saturday.
That's better than being there late or not at all. Cool. 6-6-2. There you go. We'll be there, Brett, all weekend, myself all weekend, and then we will get together and put together another podcast for you. Appreciate you guys listening. As always, he's Brett Nevitt. I'm Aria Masudi, and this has been Sunday Golds.